Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum. And along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings, Brother Bilal. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Oh, great, great. Alhamdulillah. Doing good, my brother.
Alhamdulillah.
Looking good.
Okay, welcome to another edition of our show.
Thank you.
And
thank
you. Of course, we are going to be having an open mic this evening.
Yeah.
And let me see if we got our other co-host on, with Sister Nyjah. Sister Ali, are you with us?
I sure am. Good evening, everyone. Assalamu alaikum. How's everyone doing?
Very excited
about another
week. We all fine.
Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of this evening's show. Of course,
we are looking to
network with each other and get to know each other's business, not unless you two have something special that you have in mind. I didn't know if either one of you did, but other than that, we're going to have an open mic.
That's special. Yeah, that's special.
Okay, what about you, Sister Ali?
You know, I said to the audience that I want to keep everyone posted on just the type of process I'm going through as far as doing business in Africa, right?
Okay.
I wanted to share that experience so everyone could become familiar with it, right? If they have never heard of it before or heard the process before, you're witnessing it, you know, live from my experience. And that's what I want to share tonight, you know, just where I am with that and how things are looking and just the different conversations that are being had and with whom and how we're getting here and everything in that way. So that's what I have for tonight, for our open mic, for our discussions, just, you know, sharing information.
Okay, well then we'll just take turns and talk about what's on our minds as our hosts then. Of course, I will be more than happy to open it up. And I am always talking about New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. And like I've said many, many times, when you start talking about the Black Belt, you have to start with its origins, which is the black soil. And we all, as we, matter of fact, as I was doing some reading today, continuously on Black Wall Street and its destruction. You know, the more I read that history, the more I can't believe, the more it proves that we need to do something as African Americans. Because when it comes to white supremacy, our federal government and our state governments and local governments and anybody who's just darn near white, our future with them just don't look very bright. I mean, there have been so many successes in our country and by so many African-Americans who should be deemed as heroes, but because they were black, they was, I'm talking about men like Booker T. Washington, W.D. Du Bois, and so many, many others. But when I look back at all the things that, all the powers that we have presented in this country, and like I said, it starts with that black soil because that's where it all started as far as making this country powerful and making this country rich. The free labor that they got from slavery And because they got that free labor for so long, and like we all know that that free labor range throughout the South, all the way from Texas to Virginia, but you have to include Delaware and Maryland because that's where African-American slaves were all put in farmlands. And these farmlands, of course, made America one of the richest countries, made them not one of the richest countries, but the richest country in the entire world. And a continuation of the wealth that we bring into America, and especially after the destruction of Black Wall Street, June 1st, 1910, and the I was reading about that destruction, and it said that Black folks, along with the federal government, attacked that city, and the federal government sent airplanes. In addition to the white mobs who came in by the thousands attacking that Black community in Tulsa. But in the same time, when it came to the Greenwood District, this is where the federal government had airplanes to come in and drop firebombs. And those firebombs, those firebombs took out more than 3,000 lives, and it had more than 10,000 of those who survived homeless. And this was, and so again, the white mob, but to have our own federal government to join that white mob. And after that destruction of killing our peoples, they had the audacity to arrest all of those Black folks that did survive. The local and federal government actually put them under arrest for being attacked, saying that it was their own fault that they were attacked because they should have known better than to live a better, richer life than white folks. We should have stayed being inferior, and we should have stayed in an inferior people's class and position. But because of the success of Black Wall Street itself. But, you know, I was also reading where it was saying Black Wall Street wasn't the most richest city in the United States. Black Wall Street, of course, because of the oil and the monies that was able to come out of Black Wall Street to come up with a business plan that Booker T. Washington and the Greenwood Business District was able to put together. And from that business plan, that's when Booker T. Washington named Tulsa as to be Black Wall Street. Booker T. Washington gave Tulsa, the Greenwood District, that name. But Tulsa and the Greenwood District was not the most richest city at that time. in the United States. Some of your most richest cities was cities out of many of our colleges out of Tuskegee, Alabama. You had colleges such as Morehouse out of Atlanta, and the cities and the black productions that was going on in places like Memphis, Tennessee. And many of us.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I am going to, I'm going to ask you, until you're ready to speak, please just put yourself right on mute, or we'll be getting to you as soon as we can. But I know we all cannot speak at the same time, and no offense. But like I was saying, and I won't be long in my little summary, but information that all of us should go online, if you can't pick up the book, go to Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, and you will see many, many Black Wall Streets, even some in Africa now. But you will see the history of Tulsa and the destruction that that went on there. So if you can't buy the books, you can go online and you'll see much information. But we all should know the history of what went on in Tulsa, and you should know the history of the Black Belt Business District. And that's that business district that I am speaking of that was very, very successful throughout the South. And these states and business districts that ranged through the Black Belt, they had banks in their cities, many of the cities. They had insurance companies. They had airport, their own airports, their own transportation lines. They were totally independent. And during the time of segregation, or during the times that we're speaking of, because of segregation, our monies and our businesses stayed in our own black communities, and the power of our black dollars circulated in our communities over 40 times before it left our communities. And of course, the information I got, as a matter of fact, Sister Aisha give me, and I read this now for myself, but today, the monies that we earn, and I can tell you right now, it's projected that our consumer spendings for this year will be more than $1.8 trillion. That $1.8 trillion and even more only stay in our communities for a period of 4 hours, because we have no businesses that we can do business with each other in the black communities. Therefore, we're forced to go on the outside of our communities and be consumers to somebody else's communities and someone else's business. So again, the power of the black dollar, and that's where Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, that's what we're trying to go back to. That's the business plan we want to go back to. The business plan that was put together by Black Belt Wall Street and Black Wall Street, and putting together that business plan, we will decide. We will be building businesses both in the African American communities and I look forward to doing business in Africa if we can reach the deal that we're proposing to reach in Africa. I have some information as we go along this evening, and I am going to share some information on franchising and the cost to franchise businesses that you would consider key turning businesses. And we know those are the businesses that we're out here going out of our communities and doing business with. But of course, if that's the business that we wish to do, spend our monies, then why not franchise these businesses and bring them right back into your communities? That way, not only are you still doing business with your favorite restaurant, your favorite hotel, or your favorite whatever business you're spending monies on the outside of your communities, bring those business back into your communities where we can continue to spend our monies, but we're keeping the profits of what we are earning. And the dollar bill now is circulating back into our communities. So I will, that's my general opening comments. And Brother Aziz, you, I will go to you, and then we will go to our dear sister, Brother Aziz. Okay, did you, Brother Aziz? I had him earlier, Sister
Aziz. I'm here, Brother Bilal.
Okay, I'm sorry, Brother Aziz. We welcome your comments.
I was talking and didn't realize that I put myself on mute while
okay.
going on, just in case, you know, anyway, yes, greetings. Thank you. A greeting to you and Sister Satya, I had been wanted to share that I had been reading up on some of the National Black Farmers Association information. And as earlier in our program with Sister Aisha Abdul Ali, we had discussed, she had discussed in part of the disaster preparation that there was going to be food shortages. And reading up on the National Black Farmers site there and the president of the National Black Farmers Association, Frank Boyd Jr., he was saying that there is a forecast because of the war going on in the Ukraine, the weather we've been having and that, that there's going to be a shortage in of food because farmers, they say, they're feeling the pinch of the high cost of the diesel fuel, and the fertilizer and truckers are feeling the pinch that you have certain regions that's not planting crops at this time because of the weather, and the weather here that damaged crops. It's going to be a big shortage of wheat and products that are made from wheat. So, yeah, you know, that's something that is going to affect us all in terms of the foods that we get. So one thing we want to do this summer, especially as we know that there are a lot of black farmers in the South, especially in this region that we're in, when you see them selling products, go buy some. Go buy some because this is where you're going to get the best deals, because in the grocery stores, the price of the food is going to go up tremendously. And they're saying, like, you know, eggs and things like that is up so high. Matter of fact, they say overall food from this report, overall food in general has gone up 12%. And, you know, some items they said, like eggs was 32%, milk 16%. And these items going up like that, is, you know, should be something where we consider even buying in bulk together. Like Brother Bilal, our audience don't know, but I'll tell them that Brother Bilal and I will usually go buy our meat products, vegetables, and things like that. We'll go buy it in bulk and split it up because it's a cheaper cost for us. We'll go to these farmers markets and the meat suppliers, and the supply halal product, and buy our product like that. and to our listeners, this is something good to do also with some close friends or something. Go buy in bulk together. Go buy your potatoes, your greens, and various products that you all use in common. When you buy them in bulk like that, you'll get a better deal. Even at places that sell restaurants food, a place maybe called Restaurant Depot, and some other places may have a different name where restaurants go by. Well, any of us that have business license or things like that, we can go buy these things in bulk and buy them together, wherein, you know, overall it's going to save us all the way around. So, wherever it is, this is what New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association is about, marketing businesses and having these different African-American business network with one another, as well as sharing the information and the networking with one another, as well as those who have not, who are interested in going in business and don't know exactly how to pursue their startup. Well, that's what the New Africa Business Association Black Belt Wall Street can provide for you, that help that you need to start a business and let you know what your startup's costs are. We have everything that you need to start up a business. Well, Brother Bilal and Sister Sasha, that's what I wanted to start out sharing before we got into other topics. So I want to turn it on over to Sister Sasha and let her talk about Africa, and then we get back to, I guess, talking about doing business in the African-American community.
Brother Aziz, just before we go, that subject that you're on, it's interesting that, that you brought up that subject, because just on the news this evening, this, what you're talking about now, is the next, I wouldn't say the next is already here, is going to be a major disaster. You have right now a situation where they're actually turning office buildings, brand new office buildings, where it would be occupied by big businesses, but because these commercial buildings are not being used because of the pandemic, and many employees are staying at home, so they don't have a real need for these large office buildings, or now they're turning the office buildings and to form brand new office buildings, they're turning them into farm growth produce.
Wow.
Yeah, they're actually great big office buildings there with, they're turning them into places where they're actually growing farm produces on the inside, and farmers are renting
like that hydroponics,
whatever way they're growing the produce, they're doing it inside now commercial office buildings. So it goes to show that, and I can tell you right now, the cost to rent these commercial office buildings are going to be extremely high. So if the cost of renting these office buildings are that expensive, just think what the produce that they're selling is going to be. So you're looking at some very high costs when it comes to the foods. And I really, and what I really feel bad for is that the most of the country, especially, I won't just say African Americans, because you take a person who is on average income, I don't see how in the world where eggs near are going as high as some places as high as $6 and $5 a dozen.
Yeah, yeah.
How in the world is a family going to eat hear it with prices like that. And so the subject that you're on right now is a subject that we as African Americans, and I say because you have to sort of look out for yourself now.
And when I say yourself,
I'm talking about communities. And as a community, we need to look out for ourselves, and of course, we're glad to help others. And you know how giving African Americans are. But we need to really do everything as far as looking out for our own communities. And when I say that, that's what I mean about going back home, going back to the South, going back to your own black communities while you can. And then when you get there, the land that you want, the lands that's been setting, and I know many African Americans, I know when we had the estate planning program last week, I got a whole bunch of calls from African Americans who were living in the northern cities, but they have estates in the South where their grandparents, great grandparents, or what have you, left properties, but most of them haven't been attending these properties and haven't been in attendance of these properties. They don't even know the situation of some of the properties that has been inherited to them. That's how long it's been since they have even looked into the properties that they own, because they just haven't had no interest in going back to the South or even looking into living on the farms or what have you that they originally came from. That is our survival, and not only our survival for those who own the land and can produce produce, there is a wealth amount of monies that can be made from farming and growing farmers' produce. So again, like I said, our communities is on life support. And if we don't start becoming more responsible to our own values, because, like I said, for those who, and I know there are many, I'm not for sure if I can afford to pay $6 a dozen for eggs. And so I know if I can't afford it, there are many, many others that certainly can't afford it. So speaking of a disaster, there are all types of disasters all around us. And how do we take care of these disasters that we're facing? And so a very good opening, and like I said, I look forward to continuing that conversation, because that is a disaster. Yeah. where I studied, because I mean, one of the things I would hate to see is families going hungry, especially here in America. So a very good conversation, and it's one that we need to stay on top of. Sister Sasha, I'm not going to hold you up any longer, but thanks for allowing us to our comments. Well, we'll turn it over to you and welcome your comments now, Sister Sasha.
Yeah,
thank you so much. You know, honestly, the two conversations that both of you brought up really help to align the information I'm going to bring, you know, and how does this, so the question is, so we have the history of Black Wall Street and white supremacy and us as a Black people as an enterprise and business. And then also you have the current situation where you have the United States in jeopardy, or the world in jeopardy, of a food shortage, like how does the conversation of doing business in Africa group these together or build commonalities with this together? So when it comes to what was going on in America for Black Americans as far as enterprise and business and how white supremacy affected us, at the same time, white supremacy was continuing to take an infrastructure out of Africa, right, and changing it to where it was self-serving to Europeans and the Western world. So certain skills and trades and tools and education was denied in Africa. So they were being depleted over centuries of more and more resources, and that was purposeful. When it comes to African Americans and the enslavement that we experienced as brutal and inhumane from what we experienced, the slaves also gained westernized skills by default, but westernized skills of agriculture, of technology, of engineering, of carpentry, right? Of education. We learned the social mores of the Western slave master, and then that turned into just the Western world, the Western way of doing business. We learned their language. We learned their laws. And generation and generation and generation, we were taught this. African Americans can very much assimilate in many situations in America because of how we have been preconditioned to do so. Because of these skills, we built up the United States foundationally from infrastructure, finance, education, technology, institutions. So we have these skills. By us taking these skills now and going back to Africa with the skills, it is a symbiotic relationship because we are giving back to the continent, one, what was taken from them, which was us being the predecessors of our ancestors that we're returning. Also now we have the skills that operate the Western world, and so now we can bring the continent into the 21st century of resources that they require. Now, going into the conversation that Brother Aziz was saying about the food shortage, what's happening right now, and what is not talked about often, if at all, is that countries such as China and Europe and America, they know about all of this. So they're looking to see where they could gather resources in order to be, one, competitive with one another, as they always are, but also to where they can get ahead. They need to find land. They need to find soil. They need to find valuable resources in order to monopolize on the agricultural deficiencies and the food shortage. Africa right now, a lot of countries in Africa import their food. Not because they don't have the land and the resources to grow their own. They just don't have the infrastructure of growing as far as the agricultural base. Right? They know how to grow food. And then let me clarify. The people know how to grow food. However, the resources, once again, were taken from them to where they are limited in what they can do in order to create industry for exporting their food. Sierra Leone, for an example, they import rice. A country that, honestly, their ancestors, and one of my ancestors, if you look into the history of the Gullah Geechee people from North Carolina down to Florida, mm-hmm. they are the rice producers. They yeah. come directly from yeah. Sierra Leone. Documentation mm-hmm. of the women who were put on the slave boats, they were having rice grains put in their braids and in their hair in order to where whatever destination they reached, they were able to grow the rice. So this is in their ancestral DNA. This is in their culture to be able to grow rice. So why are they importing rice from other countries? because they don't have the infrastructure to grow the rice to export it. Countries such as China, United States, and Europe, they understand it. So they're jumping on the bandwagon of trying to be the first to monopolize the opportunity to bring agricultural infrastructure and efforts to export into Africa.
Yeah.
This is where we as Black Americans have the opportunity. All the Black farmers we have in the South, all the legacy of Black farming that we have, those skills, take it back to the continent, bring the resources back home, the education, the tools, all of that, and build industry to where now that country can export and build build an exporting industry, but build a food industry for themselves and still feed themselves, have enough of the product that they produce not only to feed the country but also to export and make money. This is what's happening within the community of Black investors and business people who are returning to the continent, the African Americans who are returning to the continent. I know specifically of several who are doing this in agriculture for this reason. And it continues with technology. It continues with education. That's my field, education. It continues with cybersecurity. There are many people right now listening to this program who have those skills. They even got degrees or certifications, or they're just working a job right now. You will be amazed if you work for Time Warner Cable, if you work for Spectrum, if you work for Cox Communication, or whatever cable network team you work for right now, you can take that skill over to Africa and help build internet-based service because you will know the infrastructure of it. Case in point, there was an African summit that took place in Washington, D.C., I think about 3 weeks ago now, 3 or 4 weeks ago. The purpose of that, aside of quote-unquote reintroducing the world to Africa, which doesn't need to happen, but let's just say that was their effort, the Biden administration say, hey, we're going to reintroduce the world to Africa. Okay. The Biden administration's effort was to bring together American-based businesses into Africa, right? See point going back into the competition that America has with China. And there are certain businesses and industries that are high competitive between China and the United States. And I was actually on a call about this a few weeks ago, and so I'm trying to bring up my notes to see if I can bring that up as far as certain companies and certain businesses that they're looking for. Agriculture, information technology, engineering, just to name a few, textiles. These are competitive market between the United States and China as far as the influx, trying to get them into Africa. How many people do we know that their ancestors, their great-grandparents or their grandparents have businesses in these areas, agriculture, textiles, engineering, that's some capacity. How many of us went to historically Black colleges and universities that focused in these areas, right? We had North Carolina A&T State University that focused on engineering and technology. That's my alma mater. You had Alabama A&M focused on agriculture, right? You had Tuskegee. You had Florida A&M. You had Howard University that focused on medicine. And the list goes on and on and on. These type of skills are being recruited as we speak today for Black-owned businesses to go into the continent. The way you do that is reaching out to the U.S. Trade Department and just emailing a foreign consulate. And that's exactly what I did. I contacted several of them. So heard back from a counselor from Morocco saying, yes, we are looking for educational training. We need that in our country. And we are spending millions of dollars in order to receive that. If your company is providing educational training, we want to speak to you about how that could happen. I researched further and found out Morocco is one of the African countries right now that is adamant and serious about implementing new infrastructure into this country. What they're focused on as far as education is making sure that every citizen is English proficient. So these conversations are free. These conversations can take anywhere between 20 and 30 minutes. But it's realistic for us as a people, knowing that our ancestors in this country that were enslaved, that were brought here against their will, that were forced to build this country to where it is, its infrastructure, they are the gatekeepers. We are gifted with the skills that they acquired during their unfortunate enslavement, and it was passed on, and it was, and we advanced and elevated over time. This is necessary. I believe it's necessary that we return to the continent to give these skills to the people, to the country, so they can once again elevate themselves. And presidents and ambassadors and country leaders are looking for the African Americans to do it. Because of their history of working with the Europeans and working with the Chinese, they know that what's going to happen to them is going to be repetitive to what's happened before. They're going to be exploited. They're going to be minimized. They're going to be taken advantage of. They're not going to get the right deal at all. They're going to be treated less than human. That has been the history that they've experienced. And we know what that's like as Black Americans living in this country and living amongst our oppressors and being conditioned by them. So as we talk about the status of the West right now, we're talking about food shortage. We can go over to Africa and establish agricultural infrastructure, teaching them about the various areas of greenhouse farming and water-based farming and like hydroponics and all of that, building up the infrastructure there for that to happen, living off the land, but returning to the land for that benefit. It could all come full circle, but the opportunity is now. There's so many different systems and grants and programs that will support Black-owned businesses to do that. The Biden administration specifically understands and knows that the way to Africa is through the Black American. They know that. Because they've done their research. One thing that you can guarantee about white America is that they're going to do their research. They know the history. They may not admit it to you, but they know the history. And so with that knowledge of the history, they will use that information in a manner of what's going to benefit them. They understand that the African leader, the African ambassador representative, is critical of the European or the Western American citizen, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white American. They know that they're critical and hesitant about them. Why not bring in the Black American to represent America? Because at the end of the day, they're still American. That is the attitude that they have. But what we understand is this is deeper than that, far deeper than that. And because we know we can learn our citizenship. When you have American citizenship, unless you volunteer to give that up, that stays with you. That stays with you. Your American citizenship stays with you. But you can choose to live anywhere in the world you want to. Returning to the continent with those skills is a benefit, and it's a freedom as well. More and more African Americans are living that life and exploring that as well. The option here and the understanding here is you don't have to be limited. You don't have to feel limited. And that's one thing I've noticed growing up. My parents exposed us to so many different communities growing up, diverse communities, between people from Africa, from the Caribbean, from Afghanistan, from China, from various parts of Europe, from Iran, of various areas of Eastern and Western Africa. So we've seen these communities. When they come to America, they come with the understanding of they're here for business or education or to establish business or to gain education and go back home or to gain education and then have their children born here so they can have the same thing. It's always a very focused purpose. They always have the option of home. Although their country may not be as stable economically, although their country at the time may be going through war or maybe their country doesn't have the same resources, they have the option of home. We are a unique people that were taken from our home, restricted from our home, and had to establish a home here over and over and over and over and over again. Now we have the opportunity to explore the original landscape of home, what that looks like, what that feels like, what are the options, what are the possibilities. And in any way, capacity or possible, what you were saying, Brother Bilal, about franchising, right, or the option that I had about contacting, you know, U.S. trade government and just communicating with a consulate from another country and saying, hey, this is a business that I have. Is your country interested or looking for this type of industry? But the options are there. I think now is the time for us to explore it. That's how I want to open up the conversation.
All right. And Sister Sasha, I'm not for sure. We may have some of our guests that went to Africa recently. I don't know if I just saw some of their area codes, but let's open our mics up, and I'll ask any of the sisters that are from Delaware or from many other parts that recently just came back from Africa, if you're with us, we certainly want to hear from you and your experience. So we open our mics up, and if there's any of those sisters that just came back from Africa, we welcome you to the show, and we welcome your comments. Sisters, if you're there, just feel free to come right on. Okay. I am loving to hear from those sisters. I thought I saw one or two of the area codes, but hopefully we didn't lose them. But anyway, Sister Alita, what you were saying, you see, I've always said that, you see, that's the deal. And that's the deal we can make with Africa, and that's the deal that we should be making with Africa, is just what you were saying. African Americans are the most industrialized black peoples in the entire world. And because of our industrialization skills, if we took our skills back to Africa, along with the large amount of monies that we spend here in the United States, if we took our skills and our monies back to Africa, I know Africa, when we say Africa, we sounds like we're talking about a country, but we're talking about an entire continent, one that is much larger than North America and South America. But I am seeing that entire continent, if African Americans was to take their skills and their monies back to Africa, we could industrialize so many of the African countries. And that's the deal that Africans and African Americans should be making with each other. And that's the deal that we're looking so forward to, going to the, like you said, the different ambassadors or the different places of government where we can have these communication business conversations. But of course, like you said, if we took our industrial skills back along with our monies, then Africa and African Americans could be quite prosperous, quite prosperous. So, yes, that's what we're indeed looking forward to achieving, is communications with Africans and African Americans, getting together and become vested with each other. So, excellent conversation. And again, we're going to say, if any of the sisters that who just came back from Africa, at any time, if any of you come on, break right in so we can greet you and hear about the experience. Mic is open. Go right ahead.
Yes, yeah, right, Brother Blair. What I wanted to say was also, you know, you don't hear it mentioned or not, but George Washington Carver, back in the time at Tuskegee, that was given a proposal by another brother named Oliver Golden, and he was a teacher there, but a former student of George Washington Carver, and they sent a proposal to the Soviet Union. Soviet Union was facing a real agricultural problem. They sent a proposal to the Soviet Union saying that we have skilled agricultural scientists, economic scientists, and that here, and we'll be willing to come over and, you know, help you improve your economy for a certain price. And said that the Soviet Union, Stalin was the president of the Soviet Union, and the agricultural scientists and that went over to Russia, and that's how come you have a lot of black Russians over there right now from this time. They were children of those agricultural scientists and that went over to Russia to help them come out of a food shortage, farming crisis that they had, and taught them how to farm. But it's not a history that it's, you know, promoted, but Tuskegee know that they had that happen, and I don't know if a lot of African Americans know that, but we've had. So what it is, and I'm kind of asking, and wanted to say, I made that statement, but I wanted to ask Sister Sasha, have she ever heard of any of the black colleges or whatever grouping with some of those African nations to form some kind of a contract with them to send a crew of people over, how to teach a number of their people how to farm, and perhaps that's the one way of getting something started in the area of them having food production, because we know one of the biggest problems in Africa, of course, is having a transportation network, but when it comes to that, so have Sister Sasha, do you know if any programs like that have been initiated?
Sister Sasha, just before
am familiar with Ambassador Shamsidy, Wally Shamsidy. I know we had him on our show once. He was working directly with Florida A&M, FAMU, to be involved with work in Sierra Leone. You know, that's his alma mater, and it's a very passionate project. I'm not sure if it's agricultural based. I can look into it, but he definitely is passionate about bringing in the HBCU a component into that. I know with in my past, I've done the same. I brought in one of my graduate alma mater. I have a graduate degree from North Carolina Central University, and I was able to bring the university into Tanzania and East Africa to provide services from the education department, so that university was able to provide training to teachers in education. And so with the work that I'm doing now, within these proposed projects for Sierra Leone and Morocco, I definitely plan on bringing North Carolina A&T, my undergrad alma mater, into it. You know, the HBCU component, I think, would be such a dynamic venture to do because of the history that HBCU has in America, born and bred from the African Americans. Interesting enough,
yes.
Found this out later, and I think maybe Ambassador Shamsuddin said this, that one or two of the founders of FAMU was actually originally from Sierra Leone. So the African component existed even in the beginning of the institutions of HBCUs, from that example alone. So I can look into as far as the agricultural component is concerned, but yes, I do believe that that is something that is that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I thank you, because I see that as a really opportunity for black colleges as well as agricultural students there, because I know from the Black Farmers Association, they probably would be interested in helping that way also, but our Black Farmers Association is still having problems collecting the monies over 10 years ago that they were supposed to get in their settlement, and it's been, you know, sparsely given out to them, a little bit. It's like crumbs, and they haven't settled yet. But I was looking at the news today that America wants to send 30 Abram tanks over to the Ukraine with other equipment. So this is a problem, you know, and like black farmers themselves just getting the money that they're supposed to get to be able to continue on in this crisis time to be productive, because a lot of them that were depending on this money from that. So to have some contracts with some other foreign African governments, that would be great if the National Black Farmers Association had some kind of connection that they could tie in with that, you know. I mean, that may be in something that, you know, you would know about, or maybe Ambassador Shamsuddin might be, privy to making a connection, pulling those two together, the president of that association, that's Mr. Boyd, and some of the, the leadership from some of these African countries that really want to develop, because I'm sure with the technology and the skills, and I do know because I had a family member that was a president of the Black Farmers Association in Alabama, but he passed away some years ago, so I don't know who's handling that right now other than this man named Boyd. But in that process, when he was the association, as well as the Black Cattlemen's Association, we did have them one year come and speak in Chicago at a National Muslim Convention, and they were trying to solicit more people, that were young people at the time that were interested in cattle farming. And as well as farming, and that's another thing. We do have a lot of African Americans that are into farming. They were born and raised right down there, but they're not a lot, and they could use some help. And in the big cities, in that we don't have a lot of African Americans. We got tons of them here, but the bulk of our people we know on the land down south. Do you think, Sister Sasha, that there's a way of connecting those two entities together, the Black Farmers Association with the
Brother Aziz and Sister Sasha?
Yeah, most certainly. I can work with you afterwards, Brother Aziz, to get that information to the man, to Ambassador Shamsuddin. But outside of that, most certainly. Most certainly. And if it's not in Sierra Leone, the connects that he has to other countries in Western Africa, they're looking for that. as well. I think that is very viable, very possible.
Yeah.
Mhm. Most certainly. Yes. And it's
Thank
a great idea as
you.
Well.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
I want to at this time open our mics up, Brother Isaiah, Sister Sasha. Open our mics up to all of our listeners, and we're just going to open up our mics. So if you have any questions, any comments from anything you have heard so far, or if you have some suggestions of ideas that you would like to present, our mics are open, and we welcome your comments. Our mics are open to our listeners. Anyone have any comments or questions? We welcome your comments or questions. All right. In that case, we're going to continue our conversation and our show. But at this time, it is 8 o'clock, and we'll be bringing in there some of our Central Time guests. And in that case, our sister Aisha will be taking over the show from here, and we will be joining her. Sister Aisha.
Well, good evening, everyone. Assalamu alaikum. And thank you very much. But I tell you, I am more than willing to discuss this topic of returning to Africa and doing business in Africa. As you know, my show is about climate change. And, of course, we will always continue that topic. But since we have started this evening, I'm more than happy to participate with this group, with Sajda and Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, and hopefully our audience, to talk about business in Africa and how we can participate. So if I have you all's okay, I would like to talk about that with you all. And next week, we'll get back to climate change. Okay.
Well, that's because we definitely would like to continue this topic. Let me just say this, brothers and sisters. And like I said, I was going to share some ideas as far as and I was talking about franchising, but at the same time, and the only reason I was talking about franchising is to show you the differences of prices if we was to take these same business ideas or these same businesses to Africa rather than right here in the United States. And because of the because of how much our monies appreciates when it comes to Africa. For instance, let's just say we know the hotel business is something that right here in the United States is highly needed because we spend more monies in hotels, but every time we go to a hotel, we know we have to spend monies outside of our communities because I can't think of the first hotel to register here in the United States. So again, you take a business like a hotel business, and I'm looking here at the Hampton Inn, and I got several of them here, but starting right there, the Hampton Inn, if we were to buy or to franchise an Hampton Inn hotel, it says the initial investment would be $3.8 million. That would get you started. The overall cost of the hotel would be $14.1 million. And these figures are about 2 years old. So they could have gone up. I doubt if they've gone down since then, but giving you an idea of the cost of putting a hotel in the black community here in the United States. But if we went to have a resort, and like you said, in Sierra Leone, Africa. If we want to have a resort in Sierra Leone, Africa, because of the money's differences, we would be talking the same investment for, and let's say the money's is, I don't know, 15 to 1, 20 to 1, I don't know. But if it was that type of exchange, then you would be talking a $14 million here in the United States. That same $14 million for about $2 million or less, you could build that same hotel in Africa. So that's the, and again, I could go on with many different franchises. But like I said, the American dollar that African Americans have and the opportunities of going back home, Africa, and building businesses in Africa, we could now own our own resorts, hotel resorts, any shopping centers. I mean, you name the business, because $1 million of American monies in most parts of Africa, $1 million could turn into anywhere from $8 to $10 to $15 million. So the opportunities of owning businesses in Africa would be much easier, less costly, and my goodness, look at, you don't think you're going to make a lot. Just imagine if we own a something that would be compared to a Hilton on a resort in Sierra Leone, as to where $2 to $5 million could build you a 5-star hotel. And that's what I mean about African Americans and a group of us collectively putting our monies together and going to Africa to do big business, not little business, because now we can do big business, whereas trying to do the same business here in the United States would be very costly. But doing the same business in Africa is very, very affordable. So I want to start there.
I think you're making a point there, my brother. Assalamu alaikum, everybody. Good evening.
Yes.
Brother Bilal. We're going to work on that hotel, but if I may just interject something right quick, because...
It won't be a chicken farm.
Little Sister Ali, that young lady is you're a godsend, first of all.
Yes,
and secondly,
yes.
Honey, you are a brilliant, and it's a pleasure knowing you.
Mm-hmm.
When you were speaking, I came on... You were speaking about, agriculture, and not to get away from building hotels and resorts and things of this nature, but let's just stay with the land.
Yeah.
Because what you were saying, I have a good imagination. I'm thankful for it. But as you were talking about it, I could see visions in my head. Because it sounds as if we here as African Americans, we have the knowledge, and they have the land. But see, what they didn't know is that neither the twain shall meet, if you know what I mean. They didn't plan for the African American and the African to ever unite. They didn't think that was ever going to be a possibility. Because taking our knowledge and our skills there you'd be amazed at how much money you're going to make just from the concept.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing, and I know my brother don't want to hear about my chickens or our chickens, but, honey, we're going to, we're in the Gambia now, and we, it's, please, Sister Aisha and little Sister Aisha, please consider speaking to our group, because you're so uplifting, so inspiring, and the brothers would love to hear it. They need to hear everything that you're speaking, because we have in our minds, we have expanded. We have expanded, and we're watching all types of videos on chicken production, because we want to have some of the best produced chickens ever. So therefore, we have in our minds, we have diversified our, we're in the process now of putting together a store, because the purpose of that, because we must raise money so that we can have more money to raise more chickens, because we are serious about what we're doing. And again, anyone else who may be interested in seeing what we're doing in the Gambia or what we are about to do in the Gambia is more than welcome to join us, because I just feel as though it's a gift from above, and he's chosen us to do it. So I thank you guys for your time, but please, I would appreciate, and Brother Aziz, don't give up on us.
Yes.
We haven't given up on you.
I won't. That's right. I will not give up. I still won't.
Thank you, my brother, because
all right.
We got some things going on, but I'm enjoying what we're doing with our, and I will be enjoying it more when we can make our first purchase. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Yes. Is this the same organization that I think a brother that came on about 3 weeks ago said Brother Pruitt is his name?
No, Brother Pruitt, you know, he kind of kicked us to the curb, and that's fine.
Brother Pruitt kicked you to the
Hello.
Curb.
Hello. Can I come in?
Hello?
Yes,
sure.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Who
I'm
are we
sorry.
Saying? Who is coming in? Who is coming in?
Yeah, my name is Usman Darami.
Okay, welcome.
And
to the
I am originally from Sierra Leone, and I'm a retired engineer, and I live in Detroit for almost 50 years.
Yes.
Okay.
And yes, I want to know if, because everything that has been discussed here, I think I have worked on it a little bit. I have been trying for the past 25 years for me to link African American know-how to the African to the African opportunities, and I have a lot of ideas that I would like for me to really share with you all. I don't know, is there any other platform for me to be able to get the names of whoever spoke, like the gentleman who spoke about the result, the agriculture and the technical component of the agriculture, and even association with black farmers? So is there a follow-up platform wherein we can be able for us to go and revisit all what has been said, and maybe I probably will have something to say about it. And I have taken people from Detroit to Sierra Leone on several occasions, even before the war and after the war. And but I think somebody just called me and told me about this organization, and which by listening to the few words I've heard, I think is the right place. But, yes, I want to know whether if there is a way somebody can be able to continue the dialogue after.
Yes, sir. I would introduce you, and I'm going to have you to speak to her right now. Sister Slicer, I think this is one that you need to sort of take sort of charge of, since you are working with the ambassador of Sierra Leone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Most certainly. Yes, brother. So I'm glad that you said that you have been working in the United States for several years trying to build this bridge. I definitely know that there's other just other Africans such as yourself who've been doing the same, and I think that the timing now is perfect because there is a large, large audience of Afro-Black Americans who want it, who are willing, who are looking for it, and so this is definitely the platform for that.
Okay.
A few weeks ago, we had on Ambassador Wali Chamsuddin, who has been appointed Ambassador of Trade and Envoy by the President Bio from Sierra Leone to seek out business, Black American business, particular to bring over to Sierra Leone for infrastructure and trade and such. And about 3.5 weeks ago, the ambassador was successful in taking over 50 or 60 Black Americans to Sierra Leone to look into business and such. And so he's continuing that work as of today. And I know I'm affiliate of that. I know several people who went over. I'm also working on some business proposals in my field of education. I'm an education consultant with the country, and then other opportunities such as agriculture, such as cybersecurity. All of this infrastructure-based areas is being discussed, and business is being put on the table to advance the country of Sierra Leone. I know this is a passion, this is a focus that the president has set forth. And also other countries such as Ghana and Senegal are following suit as well as far as doing that. So whatever personal information you need from me, I could definitely get that to you, and we could have conversation about what you want to do and what you're interested in and such as that.
Okay. So how can we establish that particular, you know, that contact?
Okay. Let me give you my number. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
No. Your
name first?
Sajda.
Huh?
Sajda. My first name is Sajda.
Spell it for me, please, because
S as
the phone.
Sam, A, J as in John, D as in David, A-H.
Please start over again. I'm sorry.
Okay. My first name is spelled S, letter S as in Sam, A, J as in John, D as in David, A-H. Last name is Ali, A-L-I. A-H, H as in Heather.
A-L-I.
And my last name is Ali, A-L-I.
Okay. Okay. You...
So it
so
might be better to give an email address so he can just email you and you all can start a conversation that way.
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
give me your telephone number first.
That would be...
All right, my telephone...
Why don't you start with an email address?
I can give you my number if you want.
Let me give you a very simple email and we can communicate from there.
Okay.
Okay, so it will be my first name, Sajda, S-A-J-D, as in David, A-J.
Hold on. This has lowercase letters, right? S-A-J?
Yes. A-J-S-A-J.
No, I lost the number again. You see, that's the thing, and, you know. You see, S like in Sam, A like in Apple,
yes.
J like in John,
uh-huh.
D as in David.
No, yes.
A as in Apple.
Uh-huh.
And H as in Henry.
Yes.
Okay.
The last two letters for this email address is A-W.
A-W?
The letter A. A, the letter A as in apple and W as in water. So it's S-A-J-D-A-H-A-W at gmail.com.
Okay. S-A-J-D-A-W?
Yes.
A-W-I-T.
No, S-A-J-D-A-H-A-W.
D-A-H-A-W.
A-W at gmail.com.
At gmail.com. Okay, let me give you mine just in case I have problem getting, so you can also send me an email.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. My name, my, it's my first and last name is U-S-M-A-N Usman Dat Darami D-A-R-A-M-Y at gmail.com.
Okay.
And my telephone number
gmail.com.
Yeah, let me give my telephone number again, just in case. My telephone number is
313-610-6733. Okay, 6733, got it.
Okay. So, Ali, I'm waiting for your, I'm waiting to hear from you, and I think, I'm not going to say anything, but I think, I will tell you what I have done, you know, in this area for the past 20-something years.
Okay.
And, yes, and I think you will be happy to really see what I've done, even in Sierra Leone itself. But anyway, so I'm, you know, that's all I got to say for now, but I will we'll communicate and I will give you a little bit more.
Great. I look forward to the conversation. And for all the other listeners, that email address I gave, you can definitely reach out to me if you have any other questions or connections as well. That is definitely a contact information that is open to those who are listening if they want to learn
more information. Let me just make sure I get this one correct. It's
okay.
Sam, Apple, John, David, Apple, Henry, Apple, water at gmail.com.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
And let me just and sir, you said your name again is what?
My name is Usman. U-S-M-A-N. Usman, like a U.S. man.
Yes, sir. Brother Usman, we're certainly glad to hear from you and to meet you. But like I am saying to you and all of our listeners, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, we know we have professionals ready to serve our communities.
And what's your name, sir? What's your name?
My name is Bilal Masadiq Bynum. I am the B-Y-N-U-M,
B-Y-N-U-M?
B-Y-N-U-M, Bynum, Bilal Masadiq.
Okay.
And, my point is this, is that the New Africa Business Association, we look forward to working with brothers like yourself and everyone else.
Okay.
But it's very important before we can share our valuable information, and of course we come on this radio every Wednesday, and you're welcome to join us to share in on information. But we need your memberships. We have been saying now for over a year or so, brothers and sisters, please join New Africa, Black Belt Wall Street, and become a member. And once you, okay, you become a member, we know that you are vested in some way with us, or you like what we're doing, and we can all do it together. But this radio station and our being able to communicate all around the world costs money. And so,
okay, so how do I just tell me how I can go about becoming a member? What do I need to do? Tell me that.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much for asking. Go on the website. Go to New Africa Business Association .com.
Okay, hold on. New Africa
Business. No, listen to me carefully. Go to New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association .com. I will repeat to everyone. New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association .com, and then go to membership. Our annual membership is only $50.
I miss the word after black before the Wall Street. He said,
yep.
New Africa Black Belt.
Black Belt, yeah. New Africa Black Belt Wall Street .com. We welcome you and everybody else, because, brother, let me say, when it comes to Africa, we really want to become vested with our African brothers and sisters. We think African Americans are good for Africa. And we think Africa is good for African Americans. White supremacy is no good for any of us, because it's not going to do nothing but explore us for the rest of our lives, and we're tired of it. So again,
Brother Bynum, you're speaking to the choir.
Thank you. So again,
you're preaching to the choir. You know, if you want, I can give you references from African American politicians in Detroit, and then some prominent ones. I can give you. I can give you my reference for you to check me out.
So you are
preaching to the choir. I am in this one here, head and toe.
Thank you. We need your support, and we need your work. So please come aboard. So
I am on board, you know.
Thanks, your
first name is Bynum, but I didn't get the last name. The last name is what?
No, let me just give it to you. Bilal Masadiq Bynum. Bilal Masadiq Bynum is the last name.
Okay, Bly.
Yes, sir. So again, and of course, you can always reach us at 301-234-9090. That's our
301-234-9090.
And our email is nabassc@gmail.com. nabassc@gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Okay, it's really nabassc.
@gmail.com. Yes, sir. And also, let me just say, we need a state representative for Michigan. So you might find that you and your associates, you might help us to build in that area. So we look forward to
that. Because I know quite a few, people here. Some of them, I met them in school some years ago, but one of them has retired. He's now in Florida. And, he was a state senator and Wayne County commissioner and the city council person. And he's even planning for him to go to CLM. I've been to CLM with him 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
So Yeah, so he wants to go again with me. We are working on it, but his wife just passed, you know. And, you know, I've done a lot in this particular area, trust me. And you will see as we communicate, okay?
Let me just say this, brother. I went on El Hajj in 2009.
Okay.
I was the only African American on Hajj at that time. But when I went over, I went over with brothers from Sierra Leone, brothers and sisters from Sierra Leone. Those brothers and sisters took care of me 30 days. Again, I think Sierra Leone and those the citizens of Sierra Leone are some of the nicest folks in the entire world. So again, we look forward, and I'm hoping that we can do big business in that country. But we will.
There's no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt in my mind. As a matter of fact, somebody who know about what I'm trying to do. She's the one that called me. I think, Usman, you need to really join this this discussion. So, and I'm happy, and I did. And then, you know, some of the things you talked about, I think I have worked on quite a few of those. You see, as a matter of fact. But anyway, like I said, you know, I will show you through proper documentation that what I, you know, I have to back my words up. But we'll start when I register, then we'll go from there. Okay.
Yes, look forward to it, brother. Look forward, and thanks so much for calling in. Our mics are open. Our mics are open, and anyone who is listening, if you can hear us, we can certainly hear you, and we welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
Let's say, Brother Bilal, it's Brother Aziz. Need to let Sister Aisha go ahead on and finish up telling us what she was going to inform us about Africa, since she's so knowledgeable about that place.
Oh, ain't no doubt about it.
Well, you know, I thank you very much. Yes. Thank you so much. And of the 20-some-odd years that I participated in Africa and business, not only just in business, but also from a philanthropic and volunteer position directly with the government of Tanzania during the administration of Benjamin Mkapa. So one of the things that I've learned in my time in Africa as a businesswoman and as a person setting up projects in Africa is that it's extremely important that we participate with the people and develop a social relationship with the people of Africa. Oftentimes when African-American, especially African-Americans, go into Africa, we go there with a position of wanting to be the leaders and dictate to the Africans what should take place. But one of the things we don't realize that we are dictating from what we know and the type of business style that we have adopted from the Caucasian. And they see us with that same mentality oftentimes. And so we have to search ourselves, and we have to realize that we have to change things up within ourselves in order to be successful within Africa. Africans don't need us to dictate to them. We need Africans to share with us, because many of the people that you'll be working with, they're the ones that are the grassroots. And if it's going to happen, if you're going to be successful, you must find an avenue to work with the grassroots people. And it is not with the attitude of the West. And we as African Americans, we carry that attitude with us because that's what we know. That's all we know, basically. And it doesn't work. We develop people who distrust us, who do not care for us, and we'll do whatever it takes to see that some of our projects are not successful. So it's not necessarily an easy thing to just walk into a country like Africa and develop business. We have to give it a lot of thought. And more importantly, they don't like if we come in with the attitude that we're going to make a lot of money. They want us to come in with an attitude of how can we help the people who are in poverty? That's their first concern. That might not be the first concern of the politicians, but many of them have other desires. But the first concern of the people on the ground is how can you bring your resources and your knowledge and your talent and to help us improve our lives, to improve our families, and how can we get to know you better? So we have to be very careful when we do make the approach. And naturally, we know that it's best that we go through the government. And I will say 100% go through the government because that's going to be your protection. But you're going to have to make friends on the ground. And that's something that we will have to learn. So that has been my experience. And it does take years sometimes. And once you get a reputation that you are just there for the minerals, like so many foreigners come there for, and to take out the product and then to repackage the product that you take out and sell back to the Africans, and that happens a great deal, that sets up a lot of resentment. They don't like that. And so if we can bring the resources of international banks to Africa, to the projects that we set up in Africa, that's what they need. And so I would encourage anyone who's thinking about going to Africa to do business, think about how it can benefit the people. And that's where you get your greatest support. And my experience has taught me that that's where you will see your greatest success. And they can turn into large money-making projects, but you got to work with the people on the ground. You can't go over there and have them just working for you. They want to be a part of something great also. So hopefully.
I hear you.
Now, I tell you frankly, if we are talking about selling any product, whether you're going to sell your chickens in Africa or try to export those chickens to other countries, it is not done overnight. It takes a long time, and it takes a lot of knowledge. You got to learn every aspect of export, or in your case, export. You've got to learn how to communicate with your transportation, how to get all the paperwork out of government. These are the things you need to learn before you start growing the chicken. Because
yes,
sometimes,
honey, let me tell you something. I appreciate every morsel of knowledge that comes through your cranium. But now we're not going to be importing nor exporting chickens at this time. We're just going to be investing in the raising of the chickens. Now, where the chickens, you know, he'll break all that down to us as we receive our reports. But what we're going to be doing primarily is just investing in the raising of the chickens, and they will be doing the distribution and the selling and that type thing. Are you with me?
Yes, I understand clearly what you're saying. Whenever you invest in Africa, you need to have your representative on the ground in Africa. You have to follow the money. You have
yes, ma'am.
To understand the banking system. You don't raise money and send it. you have your representatives there on the ground, and they have to be there for months.
Well, that's one of the things that I would like to discuss with you in terms of methods of payment, because as we started out with about four or five of us, and now we're up to about 25. So we haven't put out money as of yet, but the brother has come up with, and I would love to share them with you guys or whoever would like to see the designs, all three phases, the plans, and it's a beautiful thing. It's from how they're going to be grown, how they're going to be fed, immunized. You could even say, I guess, exercise, because they will not be injected to grow overnight. And then he was saying, like, it's a two-year project. And every 4 to 6 months, we will be receiving a report as to where we are with the chickens, how many we purchased, whether or not they're going to be layers, or whether or not they're going to be small chicks.
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying. I'm simply saying to you, you must have your person on ground that's communicating with the Department of Agriculture in that country. The Department of Agriculture will assist you in making sure that the people you are dealing with are not only reputable, but they have their finances in place, and that they have all of their permits, and that they have the requisite skills.
May I make an appointment, because I know you guys have other things to discuss. But
yes,
may I make an appointment with you that we can have this conversation a little further?
Yeah.
Because I do need the assistance.
We have this discussion, and we can talk about it at this week sometime. I couldn't possibly make an appointment right now, but we can talk about it. Okay. But I just simply, and you have my number. So
yes, ma'am, I do. Thank you.
I simply want us to use, we must use good business acronyms when we do business, not just in Africa, but every place. And the team, Black Belt Wall Street, these are the people who know business, and they can help.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that. Because, again, like I said, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, we have put together professionals, Sister Aisha that you're speaking with, myself, Brother Aziz, Sister Sai, and many, many others. Professionals with high educations, but on top of the education, all type of experience. This is what the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, and you hear me keep on emphasizing New Africa Business Association Black Belt Wall Street, because we are the business association, and through our association, we want to grow. We want to grow because as large numbers of African Americans, this is where we're going to get our power from. But if we start breaking ourselves off into sects, and all of a sudden this section has we're doing this and another section is doing that, and then everybody comes running back to Black Belt New Africa Business Association and saying, how professional we are, but at the same time, you're not supporting us or become members. So when I hear that there are 25 members somewhere, but they're not members of Black Belt Wall Street, and it tells me that they have probably don't have that much interest in Black Belt Wall Street, but they do have an interest in our experience and knowledge. Brothers and sisters, Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, we know we need numbers, big numbers. So when we do go to Africa or when we go to our own black communities right here in the United States, our numbers is our power. And we must come together, united in that powers in order to exceed. Sister Aisha, I didn't mean to break up, and I know it's still your show, but at the same time, unity is what we must keep. So, Sister Aisha.
Well, I think we're doing a great job. And I have to reiterate what you said. We need people to become members. And we have been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, you all have been saying it for years and years. We cannot do anything unless we come together and become a unit. We will have no voice. 5, 10, 15, 20 people have no voice on the world stage. We need strong backers. We need you all out there. And on Wednesday night, chime in. Give us your comments. Because we, too, need to hear from you and your thoughts. That's how we grow. But, folks, we as African Americans, we got to come with our subscription, our membership. So we, when we step out, and we, meaning you two, on the world stage, we can say that we are a strong, we have strong constituent base. That's what people want to know, and that's how we get respect. But two or three or four or five of us, that's not going to mean a thing. So unless you're ready to step out with us, you're doing yourself a disservice. Come along, let's unite, especially people who have common desires and objectives. And this is where we would like to go. So I encourage you to make sure, even if you cannot get to the website, go to just newafricaba@gmail.com and send an email. However you want to do it, and we'll get back with you. But
yeah,
we want to hear from you.
I just tried for me to get on the website, but I couldn't, so.
Just go to New Africa, B as in business, A as in association, @gmail.com and send an email.
Thank you.
Okay, you have that, Brother Usman?
Yeah, it's a New Africa B.
A.
B A. Mm-hmm.
@gmail.com.
Okay, New Africa B A @gmail.com.
That's correct.
And I thought you said he went on the website and he couldn't come on the website. Again, if you go to New Africa Business Association.com or go to New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street.com.
Yeah, that's what I just, I went to New Africa Black Belt Wall Street.com
and what,
nothing.
And what came?
No.
Nothing. Is it all one word,
it's,
right?
It's
all
not,
one word. New Africa, Black. It's
right.
All
and
one word.
And you're right. It's not coming up. It's not coming
yeah.
up. I tried it also.
Okay, well, then I will work on that after the show. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Our website is being upgraded as we speak.
Okay.
And
okay.
I thought it was finished today, but... I'll get with the designer and see just where we are. So hopefully not by next. So in the meantime, send us an email, and of course you cannot send in memberships until we get that website designed. So I appreciate your efforts, and yes, we will have that up and running. I know by next Wednesday, but send us an email. And one of the things I'd like for you to do is send an email so we can put you on our program list and you will be getting a notice of our weekly programs and our topics. So send us your email so we can put you on our email list. And not only you, but any of our listeners, send us your email so we can put you on our email list. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, I just sent you an email also, so I hope you reply me.
Yes, she's probably off, but I'm sure she will.
Huh? Yes. Oh no, I'm here. I'm checking it right now.
Okay.
So I'm checking it right now. Let me see. Hold on.
Brother Bilal, also let Brother Usman know that he has some topics that are people that's interested in coming on the show. Let us know about that too.
Yes, by all means.
And so we look forward to is continuing this topic as long as we need to. And don't think that I have forgotten about climate change, because there are some new developments that I need to bring forward to the audience on disaster preparedness and what the federal government is doing, the initiatives, and how they're going to affect our lives. It doesn't matter where in the U.S. you live, you will still be affected by climate change disasters. There is one organization in the world, the UN, the International Committee of the United Nations, which is the number one agency in the world that deals with the issue of climate change. They knew 40 years ago that climate change and disasters will continue to increase. 40 years ago, they knew this, and they are now putting out information. Well, all of these things are affecting us now. And last year, when FEMA, which is the number one organization that receives resources from Congress, U.S. Congress, to distribute throughout the United States and the island areas, said that since 2013, preparedness has increased by 2%. Now, folks, think about it. 2% since 2013, that says to me as an individual and as a person in this field, that is a terrible, terrible record. So FEMA, I'm part of the partnership, the alliance, and I can say that they are working very hard to get the message out. But we as African-American people and people of the, quote, underserved population, we know how to communicate with each other. So I constantly say to them, your messaging, the information is excellent information, but the messaging is not getting to the underserved population. So we must take the message of preparedness. Preparedness means mitigating the impact of a disaster. So we must take that message to our people. We're the best ones to do it. We know how to do it, and we know how to get them to listen, and we know how to call them to action. So this is what we say to the federal government. It's not enough for me to say it by myself. I need a strong constituent base so we can be more effective. So I say to you, come on board this and join this association. Folks, it's only $50, my goodness. Join this association. Just as there's a group in this association that's helping develop business in Africa, there's also a group that's dealing with the issue of climate change that's going to end up on your doorstep the same way it will end up on my doorstep. So, folks, let's get real. You got to protect your families. You got to protect your children. When a disaster strikes, your kids need to know what to do. part of the anxiety facing our young people today when parents can't figure out why they're acting the way they are is that they are afraid. They hear about natural disasters in school, but the parents aren't talking to them about natural disasters at home. If parents get on board and start talking to these young people about natural disaster, if they have a family plan on what they're going to do when it comes, it will relieve the anxiety of their children, and then maybe their children will stop going through all of these changes that the parents don't understand. So I say to you, these are important topics that's affecting your life. So come on board with Black Belt Wall Street and let us work together. So I think we have 4 minutes left. Any comments?
I've just sent my email to both Sister Ali and to newafricaba@gmail.com. I don't know, you know, so.
So I was just looking, and I didn't receive your email, but I did send one to you, but it came back to me. So let me clarify. Let me clarify. It is usman.daramy@gmail.com.
Correct. They are all lowercase letters.
All lowercase. All right. I will resend that. I will resend that right now.
Okay. So any other statements, comments before we go? We have about 2 minutes left. So, brothers and sisters, we know that there are many of you online. And as we said last week, we have people in Zimbabwe, Canada, Russia, France, Tanzania, India, Kenya, Ghana, Tunisia, Portugal, the UK, and Ireland who are listening to us. They are listening to us. Our largest audience, of course, is in the U.S. 62% of our audience is in the U.S. In Zimbabwe, 23.6% of our audience are in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. These people are listening to us because they know that what the topics that we're bringing before you are some of the most relevant topics within our community. And, of course, disaster preparedness is the most relevant topic in the world today. But we understand how to mobilize people because we did it. We did it. We did it in the 60s through the 80s. There was a national movement called the Civil Rights Movement. And some of those strategies from that movement we are going to implement because they worked. They worked. When you are going door to door to people's houses talking about disaster, you get action from them. And this is our method. This is our model. So we thank you so much, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz. We'll turn it back over to you all.
Thank you.
And so next week, this time, we look forward to hearing from all of you. Thanks so much, and good evening.